Okay, good morning, everyone. This is President Ed Chavez, and I would like to start our regular meeting of the Board of Directors for the Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District this September 28th, 2022. It's 8 a.m. So, Tom, we're going to begin the meeting. So can we have Ruben get us ready for item number one on the agenda, Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for that. We'll go to item number two, the roll call of the Board of Directors. And Vanessa, can you please call the roll?
Director Fellow?
Here.
Director Trevino?
Here.
Director Garcia?
Here.
Vice President Santana?
Here.
President Chavez?
Here. Thank you. Let the record show that all members are present for this morning's meeting. We'll go to item number three and adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
Moved by Garcia, seconded by Fellow to adopt the agenda as presented. If no discussion, Vanessa, please call the roll.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Vice President Santana?
Aye.
President Chavez?
Aye. Thank you. That passes on a 5-0 vote. We'll go to item number four, which is public comments. So anyone wishing to discuss items should do so now. There's a 3-minute time limit on remarks that is requested at this time. So, Vanessa, do we have anybody in the waiting room for comments or written comments?
We have not received any written comments, but at this time I do see that we have Ms. Cynthia Sternquist with her hand raised.
Okay. Cynthia, welcome to the Board of Directors meeting, and you may start your public comments now.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, I would like to say how pleased I am that on October 15th, Waterfest will be brought back to Arcadia Park. And I want to offer our youth commissioner's service. We have a youth commission of high school students. They are very engaged, very involved, very responsible. And they would love to be engaged in more water issues. So if you have any need for needing any help with setup or whatever it might be, I would like to make them available to you. And Vanessa has my email, so you could definitely contact me as soon as possible and I could set that up. Secondly, I want to compliment the district on the flower garden virtual workshop. We had residents from our city participate, and I have heard very good things. I'm hoping that that might be available online so that I could actually see the virtual workshop. I'm in the process of eliminating my grass and doing something that is more drought tolerant. So I'd look forward to being able to see that. And I'd also like to ask the district and the directors if they would possibly consider an outreach program similar to what you had in 2014. I believe it was called the San Gabriel Valley Water Smart City Challenge. And all the cities were invited to participate in the district's boundaries. And I believe there were 12 cities that did, but it was a great way to get cities engaged in helping with the drought situation and in, you know, looking back and thinking about what has taken place. I thought that was such a successful program, and I would hope that there could be the possibility, especially in this dire times, and that the governor has declared a state of emergency, such as Governor Brown did in 2014 when this program was developed. So I would ask the new directors who maybe are not familiar with that program to take a look at it and see if that is something the district might entertain. I'd also like to thank Vanessa for her diligence in sending out meeting notifications and cancellations. I really believe it helps with transparency with the district, with the municipalities. So a big shout out to Vanessa. And I would like to ask Tom and also Ed Chavez to please agendize going back to in-person meetings. I know I've asked that for quite some time on behalf of my residents. You know, one of the discussions when you redistricted, I believe it was especially from Director Garcia, was that one of the reasons that this was so important was to get the public to know who their directors were in light of the fact that it might have been confusing lines that were drawn. I have been out recently in many of the cities in my role as mayor, and I asked, do you know who your directors are for Upper District? And honestly, nothing has changed. So I would ask directors to please reach out to their constituents to ensure that they know who represents them, that they have been redistricted. And I think that's a responsibility of all the directors, as it is in my city and as mayor, to make sure that I'm engaged with the people that I represent. If that could be agendized, at least for discussion, we would know how directors feel about it and what the reasons are why we're not moving forward with in-person meetings. My city is more engaged than ever, and they want to meet their directors. So I respectfully ask that Chair Chavez put that on an agenda as soon as can be done. Other than that, I wish you great success in all the work, and thank you for the efforts that you're all doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Vanessa, anyone else with their hands up to be recognized?
I don't see anyone at this time, President Chavez.
Okay, so we'll move forward and we'll go to item number 5, committee reports. There are none in our packet. Go to item number 6, consent calendar. So can I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent calendar as presented, which is the minutes of the regular meeting of the Board of Directors. Any discussion on that? If not, Vanessa, please call the roll.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Vice President Santana?
Aye.
President Chavez?
Aye. Thank you. Item number 6 has been approved on a 5-0 vote. We'll go to item number 7 under actions and discussion items. We have we have 1, 2, 3 items here. So we'll go to 7A, which is to adopt the resolution amending another resolution as it relates to designated positions under the director's conflict of interest. So there's a staff recommendations, but Tom, can you give us a presentation on this item before we have a discussion?
Yeah, certainly. So under the Political Reform Act, the board needs to review and update, if necessary, their conflict of interest code every 2 years. And so in this review, the updates and changes that we have included stem from the approval of the Executive Employment Manual, where we changed position titles of certain authorized officers of the organization. And in doing so, that needed to be updated in the conflict of interest code. We also no longer have an assistant general manager, chief engineer position, and that has been eliminated from the conflict of interest code. So the what you have before you are those changes to change those position titles as required by the Political Reform Act.
Okay. Any discussion or questions that directors have on this item?
No.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds pretty simple. So let me have a motion on that.
So moved, Farrell.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution number 09-22-647. And not hearing any further discussion, Vanessa, please call the roll.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino? Director Garcia?
Aye.
Vice President Santana?
Aye.
President Chavez?
Aye. Thank you. So 7A has been adopted by the Board of Directors. We'll go to 7B, which is another resolution recognizing Water Professional Appreciation Week. There's a staff recommendation, but Tom, can you briefly tell us what this is about?
Yeah, so next week is Water Professionals a Week. Water Professionals Appreciation Week. Thank you. And so we think it is appropriate, since Upper District is a water industry leader in the region, that the board take this action, acknowledging that next week is Water Professionals Appreciation Week. And staff would certainly appreciate that resolution as well.
Thank you. Is there a motion to pass this resolution?
Mr. Chavez, can I ask?
Yes.
Just ask something. We talked a long time about honoring women in water. And I was wondering if that's, we're thinking about Grace Napolitano, maybe Gloria Gray and others who have distinguished themselves. And I wonder if that's still on the books and when we're going to do that.
Well, I know on Waterfest we're planning to recognize Congresswoman Napolitano there if she's able to attend. If not, we were going to set it for a separate date when we can meet her in person, because she deserves that recognition. But as a standing theme of women in water, that's something that staff is working on. So. Is Patty or Tom there to address this concern?
So I'll start off, and Patty, jump in if you like. So certainly, as we don't have a specific, targeted Women in Water award that we are working on, but when we look for people to recognize, like for our Water Fest, as President Chavez mentioned, we are going to recognize Grace Napolitano. Also Supervisor Barger, although Supervisor Barger, both of them have a bigger job than just water, but they're very supportive in our water initiatives. So I guess what I'm saying, we do not currently have a specific, target to recognize women in water. Patty, do you have anything to add to that? But we can certainly develop something and take a look at that.
Yeah. So I just wanted to point out, so I know in earlier, outreach communications plans, I have presented to the board that Upper District would take the lead in starting a Women in Water chapter for the San Gabriel Valley. So that is still on my goals to accomplish. I think with the move to the new office and actually having space to hold something in person, I was kind of prolonging it until we were in the new building so that we could then establish that chapter and hold something in our office. So we will start a chapter. It's something that I have committed as a goal for the district. So we hope to get that up in the next couple of months.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion on this item? If not, let's go ahead and I'll go ahead and accept a motion.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to recognize Water Professionals Appreciation Week. And Vanessa, can you please call the roll?
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Vice President Santana?
Aye.
President Chavez?
Aye. Thank you. So 7B passes on a 5-0 vote, and I want to thank staff for following through on Dr. Fellow's request for recognizing women in water. We'll go to 7C, which is an update on the state water project and the Bay Delta issues. And Mr. Love, can you introduce our guest speaker?
Yeah, I'm very pleased to introduce Stephen Arakawa. I've known Stephen a long time. He's been a Metropolitan, I think, 35 plus years. Steve, I think the first time we worked together might have been on, I can't remember if you worked on LRPs back in the, 20 or 30 yes. years ago. But for the last several years, Steve has been the manager of Bay Delta Initiatives for Metropolitan Water District, is intimately familiar, with those complex issues, in the Delta and related to the State Water Project. So, I wanted to think the attendance we have today, which is great, is, related to, they wanted to hear the outcome of closed session, but I have a feeling they're here to get some insight into what's going on in Northern California from Steve. So with that, Steve, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. And good morning, everybody. Good morning, President Chavez. And thanks for the time to go over what I think are some, key issues that are affecting the State Water Project. And today's presentation, I just hope to give you a flavor for some of the key areas and then see, what kind of questions you have. So to try to get at some of the things that are of interest to you. These are the topics that I had planned. I want to talk a little bit about some background, but not too much. And then really talking about how the different aspects of the State Water Project fit together, the regulatory efforts, both state and federal, how the conveyance project fits in, the sites reservoir planning up north. And then Metropolitan owns some islands in the Delta that they purchased in 2016 and just what's going on with that. And then the California Aqueduct, which is the key feature of the State Water Project and how the state is attempting to address the subsidence that's occurring in the San Joaquin Valley. And that affects our, our water supply in terms of capacity and then also energy use. This graphic here, I think you probably are very familiar with, but I think the key thing here is understanding how the imported water and the local and regional water fit together. As the increase in local projects occur, both in terms of groundwater storage, groundwater quality, as well as water recycling, it really becomes important that we have some amount of state project water to blend with Colorado River water, with the hope that there is Colorado River water, and then be able to recycle that. The salinity of the water is very important for recycled water feasibility, and then also meeting groundwater basin requirements to make sure that the quality of the water that ends up being recharged in the groundwater basins is meeting those regulatory requirements, as well as feasible for the operation of the water districts. So certainly, the region is becoming more and more moving towards local and regional supplies. That's certainly the case in terms of the planning that's going on now for a regional recycled water project, Southern California Pure Water, which is in the planning stage. And then at the local level, all kinds of projects that, all of you have been involved in. Where I think my presentation fits in is how do we protect the water that we get from the state project and the investment that we have, so that we can continue blending with Colorado water and making those regional projects successful. The State Water Project has been in operation, for Northern California and the Bay Area since early 1960s, and then for Southern California, really starting around 1973. But a lot of the contractors that contract for water, there's 29 of them, they've grown into their supply over time. And for Metropolitan Water District, early on in State Water Project's history, Metropolitan was getting a full Colorado River aqueduct, and its demands were not as high as they then developed. And so Metropolitan's demand for state project water grew over time. But one of the key things that triggered Metropolitan's interest in state water project water, and particularly the level of contract amount that it ended up getting from the state, was always anticipating that it would be cut back on the Colorado because of various legal developments and other requirements that had developed over time. And so it was always envisioned that, you know, Metropolitan would have state project water to help mitigate for that Colorado River. Since that time, we've seen, you know, the cuts in the Colorado River. And we've also seen in recent past some really dry times, drought times in 2008 and 2013 and now again. So the State Water Project is much different than the Colorado system in that it has much less storage. The storage is more limited on the state project side, but the hydrology is more variable. So it goes from really wet years to really dry years, and a lot of times not too many years in between. It tends to be very skewed towards the extremes. So being able to manage from year to year based on what's available becomes key. And that will, I think, become important when I talk about how do you manage for that, you know, with infrastructure. You know, the key thing that's really driving a lot of things, both north and south, is the climate and the temperature increase. And it affects things in a lot of different ways. But one particular way it affects hydrology in California is less snowpack. So the snowpack serves as like a storage reservoir when it's sitting on the mountains. It's, you know, a supplement to what storage we have in Oroville Lake for the State Water Project, or Shasta for the Federal Water Project, or any of the other regional or local projects that have storage up in this northern and central California. And as the temperature increases, as it has, as this historical depiction shows, that snowpack, if there is snow, melts a lot earlier, and it can't be captured as effectively. And so there's less to work with, less to manage, because there's less precipitation that can be captured, but less runoff. And so that not only affects water supply, but it also affects the environmental resources in the system. As the temperature increases in the air, it also affects the water temperature. They're connected for sure. And that water temperature can affect the fishery environment, where the fish get more stressed out, and you know, it affects their metabolism, and that affects, you know, how we can manage for the environment and how that affects the water projects. So here's an example. The blue area of the hydrograph where you show from the water year October through the water, through the end of the water year September, you have that peak that occurs around, you know, end of March or early April. And that's what historically has happened. And in 2021, it was pretty close to that, although not exactly the same magnitude. 2021 wasn't such a huge negative snowpack year, but this year in 2022, the shift in the hydrograph is pretty significant in that the snowpack started to melt much earlier, and that peak started to shifted from the April period back to, let's say, January. And so that totally changes how the capability of the system to manage water and to store water can occur. And so when we talk about how do we adapt to that, think about capacity to take water, capacity to store water, and what is related to that capacity. So because water projects manage water, the water projects manage from wet years to dry years and from wet periods to dry periods. We try to, you know, capture water when it's there and then store it and then be able to use it in drier times. The key is how do you do that? And at the same time, provide for the protection of the environment through the regulations and through other agreements. And so, do you have the flexibility to deliver it when it has less impact? And that's where, you know, regulatory actions come into play. How they affect the water projects, how it affects the state water project, what does it do in terms of restrictions on the exports, and how much flexibility is left to manage for those situations where you have dramatic changes through the year or from year to year. This is a kind of a high level overview of the watershed. And, you know, the watershed stretches from all the way in the north from Redding all the way to the south, down in Kern County to Bakersfield area. So it's a pretty wide, expanse of California. The Central Valley is both Sacramento Valley and San Joaquin Valley. And I know that you've probably seen the California Aqueduct that stretches down the San Joaquin Valley coming from the Delta area, which is just east of San Francisco. If you follow that blue line from the Bay Area upstream, that's where the Sacramento River and the San Joaquin River meet. And there's a lot of streams that feed into that. Both on the Sacramento side, you have the Feather River, which is where the State Water Project storage is. And then you have other rivers that feed in as well. In the Sacramento area, for those that have been there, you see the American River when you drive through Sacramento. Then on the San Joaquin River, which drains the San Joaquin Valley, you've got key rivers and streams that feed into that, including the Stanislaus River, the Tuolumne, and the Merced. And then the main stem San Joaquin River, which reaches from farther south and drains the southern portion of the San Joaquin Valley. And about two-thirds of the state of California's population relies on water that comes from this watershed. So that's separate from the Colorado. It's pretty significant, the amount of people that rely on the state's supply to some degree. And so not only do you have the State Water Project contractors, which stretch from the North Bay area in Napa and Solano to the San Joaquin Valley, where there's a significant agriculture, but also a large M&I area, Bakersfield. You've got the Central Coast, which is Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo, mm-hmm. that get state project water. And then down in Southern California, in addition to Metropolitan, which is the largest contractor for state project water, but you've got a number of other contractors that are not insignificant as well, including those in the Coachella Valley, the Santa Clarita area, just north of LA, the Mojave High Desert and San Bernardino and Ventura areas. So a good portion of Southern California and San Gabriel Municipal, which is just right in the adjacent area to you all. So a good portion of Southern California gets water from the state project, even separately from Metropolitan Water District. And, you know, the water flows from the north down the Sacramento River and goes south and then east and then west to the Bay Area and drains out through the Golden Gate. And then on the San Joaquin River, it flows from south to north and then meets up with where the Sacramento converges. And then that's the Delta area. The Delta is where those two big river systems converge. So in terms of how the water projects are affected, there are some key regulatory processes, and I'm just going to go through the key ones. On the federal side, you have the Federal Endangered Species Act, and it basically issues permits to operate the water projects, both the state and the federal water projects. And we call those permits biological opinions. And the most recent biological opinion was issued in 2019. It is currently being reviewed and reconsulted. And then on the state side, you have the State Endangered Species Act on the right-hand side of this graph. And so there's a separate State Endangered Species Act and a separate permit called an incidental take permit. And that latest permit was issued in 2020. Both of those are being considered right now for how they might be updated. And in particular, how the two might be aligned so that the operations of the two water projects are more similar versus where they are today. There's differences between the state requirements and the federal requirements. And then right down the center, you have the State Water Board and the Water Quality Control Plan and Water Rights Decision that manages water quality and flows in the Delta under the Federal Clean Water Act, but then delegated to the state, the Porter-Colon water quality requirements or statute. And so you have both Endangered Species Act and clean water requirements, and that all affects how the state water project is operated and what kind of supply we can get. So again, this is the Delta area. And so from the north, you've got the Sacramento Valley. From the south, you've got San Joaquin, the two rivers feed together, and this whole, the maze of channels here is where they all meet. That area used to be more of a natural tidal estuary, but it was reclaimed in the early 1900s to be an agricultural area. So the federal government actually incentivized parties that had settled in California to actually create agriculture. A lot of them were people that came from other parts of the nation during the gold rush, and they settled because they knew agriculture. And they created this rich agricultural area right here in the Delta. And so agriculture continues to operate in the Delta today. We get our water from the area in the south where that blue body of water is, and that's Clifton Court Forebay. And that's where the kind of the regulating reservoir that pulls water in from the Delta channels and then feeds the California aqueduct. That's where that is. And then separately, there's an intake for the federal water project, which is called the Central Valley Project. It's shown there as CVP. So those two pumping plants are in the south end of the Delta. And the water that comes to those two pumping plants comes from both north and then from south, and that water converges in the Delta. And there's various operating requirements that affect the system. There's Shasta Reservoir and how it affects temperature on the Sacramento River. There's operations of gates in the Delta area where how water is directed through the Delta. There's requirements on how much flow can be drawn towards the export pumps down in the Southern Delta. And then there's flow requirements during the summer and the fall that help support habitat actions or habitat protection in the Western Delta. And then you have other types of actions that occur under different regulations. A lot of times they actually overlap pretty significantly, but different regulatory actions are contained, whether it's Endangered Species Act or Water Quality mm-hmm. Control Plan. Mm-hmm. And so you have all of these that kind of contribute to an overall operating scheme with a lot of overlap. And in many cases today, as I mentioned earlier, on the state side, the regulations affecting the state water project are a bit different than what affects the Central Valley project. And so the state and the federal government are in the middle of determining how can we make those more in alignment. And it became out of alignment during the last federal administration where water operating controls were set in 2019 under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and a separate set were set under the State Endangered Species Act. So the State Water Board is responsible for the Water Quality Control Plan for meeting, you know, the delegated Clean Water Act authority that the federal government has, and meeting the state's water quality version of that. And then it establishes those objectives, and then it affects or implements them through water rights decisions and other types of actions. And then they review those periodically. They're supposed to review them basically every 3 years to determine whether there's any updates that are needed. We've been in a several year period of updating, of looking at what needs to be updated to those water quality standards. And then I mentioned to you the endangered species operations that were adopted under the recent, the past federal administration in 2019, and then under the state administration in 2020. And that's what the two projects are currently operating to. But there's consultations going on how to make those two maybe sync better together. A part of what is really important that could affect the water projects is what's the approach to meeting the water quality objectives that the State Water Board is reviewing and updating. So the State Water Board for several years has been working on a flow approach that would require additional flows in each of those water portions of the watershed from the Sacramento side down to the San Joaquin side, and would add to the flow that's required today for the two projects to meet, as well as other parties in the Sacramento and San Joaquin Valley. So for the first time, the State Water Board is looking at how to require other water users besides those two projects to contribute to the flows that are needed in the Delta. And that's a pretty significant thing. They put forward draft proposals, and they've moved forward on some, particularly on the San Joaquin River, where there's current litigation from the San Joaquin parties. But the key thing to know is that there's a number of parties that are involved in trying to come up with an alternative approach to implementing these objectives. And so rather than going through a water rights decision, a pure regulatory process, really coming to a settlement agreement or voluntary agreement, which is shown here on the right, where the parties come forward and say, we're willing to commit to these types of actions in order to meet our obligations under the State Water Board's authority. And so you might have heard the term voluntary agreements. It's really how the parties that are regulated by the State Water Board would meet their commitments under the Porter Cologne Act and under the water rights decision to assure that the water quality standards and the flow requirements are met. And so that would include the state project, the federal project, and other larger water users up and down the system, including San Francisco, the East Bay area, East Bay MUD, East Bay Municipal Utility District, and then in the San Joaquin Valley, there's agriculture that uses water on the Tuolumne system, on the Merced system, and on the Stanislaus system. So that those voluntary agreement type approaches would have flow, non-flow, like habitat, a science program, and funding commitments to help do that. Whereas the State Water Board's proposed approach is focused on flow. So it doesn't have those other funding or other types of management actions that could actually help the system. And the State Water Board and the state of California is currently looking at how voluntary agreements could actually be an alternative and evaluated as such, so that when the State Water Board makes a decision in the coming 2 years or so, they determine whether they go with a staff's proposed flow approach or whether they go towards this alternative voluntary agreement approach, which, you know, from the water user perspective, could end up being more comprehensive and maybe hopefully more effective and without having to go through a lot of litigation and you know, adjudicatory processes that could take many years. So it would be watershed wise. Like I said, the watershed's pretty extensive. It would include a science and governance program where the parties that are managing the water in different parts of the watershed would be part of the governance. It would also include non-governmental organizations or environmental interests on that governance process. And so the state would be developing a governance process to allow for that. And it would have funding, flow, and habitat as part of the measures to help contribute to the protection. So key thing here is State Water Board is reviewing water quality standards that have been placed for many years. They are due to update them, and the voluntary approach is a way of maybe getting the quicker action and action that people can support or agencies can support and avoid a lot of litigation. But the State Water Board would have to make that decision. They would have to decide that this approach is equal or better to their proposed flow approach. So in addition to the regulations, I think the other key thing in terms of adapting to the future is how the infrastructure that we have today is equipped to do so. And with the hydrology, as I showed you, going to more earlier snowpack melt, maybe more wet runoff rather than snowpack, it becomes important that the infrastructure is capable of capturing that. And that's how Delta Conveyance fits in. In addition to that type of capability and capacity to capture storm flows, it also is related to seismic protection. So if there's a major earthquake in the Delta, making sure that we still have an engineered system that can, you know, they can take the water and reliably deliver it through the aqueduct system rather than solely depending upon the man-made earthen levees that are currently in place that provide that water delivery system, that those levees being built many times or in many places, you know, many years ago in the early 1900s. And, you know, we know in Northern California, projected models for climate change show that from a water point of view, it could be about the same or maybe even wetter, but the runoff will occur on a different pattern. It'll be much, much more stormier, flashier, earlier runoff versus what it is today with the snowpack. In Southern California, the central projections show that it could be drier in Southern California. So just figuring out how do we take advantage of those wet period flows. The state has a timeline for how it will complete the Delta conveyance planning. So Delta conveyance is all about how do you improve the delivery system on the state project to do what I just said. And they're currently in a public review period for a draft environmental document. This is the third governor that has actually looked to do something in the Delta, going back to Schwarzenegger, then Brown. Under Brown, it was Cal Water Fix, two tunnels. Under Newsom, he quickly changed to one tunnel early on in his first year. And so that's what is proceeding, is a one tunnel project with a public draft environmental impact report out for review. Currently, that review started at the end of July. It just got extended. That comment period just got extended to December 16th. And then the target on the schedule is to finish and finalize the EIR in 2023 and then get the other permits that are necessary, including endangered species permits in 2023 and 2024, so that the state can then make a decision following that on whether to proceed with the project or not. The key purposes of the project have really emerged to be resiliency. Both the climate resiliency with the changing weather, the flashier storms, the shorter periods to capture that water and store it, but also the sea level rise projected over the next 100 years, and how that can affect the current location of diversions in the Delta and causing saltier water and maybe preventing diversions in many parts of the time period during the year. So having infrastructure that can adapt to that sea level rise in the future in the middle of the Delta there. I mentioned the seismic resiliency. The United States Geological Survey projects, you know, 70% plus chance of a major earthquake in that region in the next 20 years. And so being able to plan for that eventually, obviously this project's not going to be done right away. It's going to take time. We've known about the projections from the USGS. But I think it's just critical to do something to try to mitigate for the fact that there is this earthquake risk. And then just water supply reliability and operational resiliency by having the improved infrastructure in the Delta, being able to operate around constraints and be able to manage things more efficiently. So the environmental document has different alternatives. There's alignment alternatives and there's capacity alternatives. So some of the alternatives are through the middle of the Delta tunnel down below the surface. Some of them are along the eastern fringe of the Delta. And in fact, the proposed project would follow along the eastern fringe of the Delta. And that's different than what was under the previous Cal Water Fix version that was under Governor Brown. So there's been no decision, but in the environmental document, the proposal is that it go along the eastern fringe, attempting to reduce impacts in the center of the Delta, and then also to hook that tunnel into what's called Bethany Reservoir, which is a state project feature, but it's south of Clifton Court Forebay. And what that does is it provides some redundancy to the system so that rather than just relying on that Clifton Court Forebay and having to significantly increase the footprint of that forebay to deal with sea level rise and other capacity needs, it would instead bypass that and hook into the Bethany Forebay or reservoir, and then that reservoir would feed the California Aqueduct. So that's the other major change with this version of the with a Newsom proposal is it would be the eastern side versus the central, and then hook in with a reservoir called Bethany versus the Clifton Court Forebay, which was under a water fix. But like I said, various capacities, and the proposed project is 6,000 cubic feet per second, which would be about the level that the State Water Project would benefit the most from. There's a lot of differences that have occurred between the water fix version of the project and the one under Governor Newsom. One tunnel instead of two tunnels, the capacity being 6,000 cubic feet per second versus 9,000. So a lot of changes made to attempt to make the project maybe more acceptable. The number of intakes along the Sacramento River would go from 3 to 2. So maybe less impact in the smaller communities up there in the Delta where the intake locations are. I mentioned the alignment being on the east side, but probably really importantly is the amount of traffic effects of construction, not having to go to the center of the Delta, but rather on the eastern fringe, and maybe having less acreage footprint impacts because of this reconfigured approach. So a lot of differences there. And then the other thing that I think has been major difference is a lot of effort went into talking with the Delta interests that are in those areas and the communities, not that they approve or agree with the project, but at least to get their views on where the biggest impacts are, what could be done to reduce those impacts. All of that was captured as a way to reconfigure and put forward a revised project. And then tribal consultation that's going on under the state leadership, tribal consultation being kind of recent new state law, and that is ongoing to make sure that the tribal interests are being considered. Like I mentioned, the comment period is through December 16th. They have had three public meetings scheduled. Two of them have been completed. There's one, I think today, the 28th. They're remote, virtual, and the website for the project for the Delta Conveyance Project has the information on how to get there. The environmental document, like I said, is for review through December 16th, and comment letters and key messages are being invited by not only the state under its leadership on the project, but also Metropolitan sent a letter to its member agencies to invite comment as well. The next topic is Sites Reservoir, which also is very related to climate change. And as I mentioned, the snowpack and diminishing snowpack, higher temperatures, having the ability to capture that water in wetter periods and short wet periods and then manage it. So that could be for both water user, water agency benefit, but it also is a key part of how the environment can be managed. The state has very much put this reservoir as a priority in its water supply strategy. There's a number of other storage projects that they are also pursuing to get done, but Sites Reservoir is one of the key ones. And this would allow for water to be captured during those storm flows and then hold it and then be able to manage it and deliver it when it's needed. And it would be about somewhere between 1.3 and 1.5 million acre feet of capacity. It'd be off stream. It wouldn't be on a major stream. It would be actually off the stream, so not affecting, you know, the river systems. And it could be the largest dedicated environmental storage, so helping to deal with climate change and temperature control and how do we create water supply for flows for fish. There's been pretty broad involvement from a number of agencies in Northern California and in Southern California. Southern California agencies interested in it, I think both from a water supply standpoint, but also what the environmental protections could provide for maybe more regulatory stability and maybe more certainty for the State Water Project. But then there's a number of Sacramento Valley parties that are looking at it as a part of their future as well, including those that are shown on the right. The state and federal government is also involved, and I would say pretty significantly, because the state of California has an interest in those environmental flows. And then the Bureau of Reclamation, similarly, because of how the regulations have affected Shasta Reservoir up in the top of the system. Because of salmon and temperature, Sites Reservoir could be a mitigating mechanism to allow for water management that could help add some flexibility that currently is wound pretty tightly because of salmon requirements and temperature control on the Sacramento River. So statewide benefits are I think pretty important. Could provide that cold water up in Shasta Reservoir because you're offsetting it with water stored in Sites Reservoir. Could have dedicated environmental storage and could help mitigate for those temperature increases. It would have integrated operations with the state and federal projects, although it would not be part of the state or federal projects. It would be a separate project on its own. And then I guess the last thing I would say is for us and for Southern California, not only could it provide for that regulatory stability because of the environmental measures, the environmental storage, but it also could provide, if the region decides, if Metropolitan decides, it could provide some added supply capability for the future in order to provide for that reliability from the state water project system. There's a lot that's been done, including a public draft environmental impact report and a lot of analysis, but it's the Sites Reservoir Authority is looking to finalize and make a decision on that environmental document, in the remaining part of this year, early next year, and then secure the key permits, including the endangered species permits, and then, project operations, how those operations would be factored in with all of the other water systems that are in the region. And then advancing the engineering to support the design and construction. That's a picture of Jerry Brown out there in the middle of the area there, the reservoir outlook. But like I said, it's an off-stream storage reservoir. And Metropolitan last March approved its portion of the planning costs for the next 2 to 3 years to help finish the project planning. And then Delta Islands. I mentioned that Metropolitan purchased Delta Islands back in 2016. There are four large islands and one small portion of an island kind of in the western fringe. That small portion of the island in the western fringe was sold to the Department of Water Resources for habitat purposes, but Metropolitan remains in ownership of the four that are in the middle of the Central Delta. And a lot has happened there with regard to how we plan for levee improvements and secure that pathway in case there's a major seismic event. Even without the tunnel, being able to secure water supply soon after an earthquake has been a main goal of Metropolitan, to make sure that levees are improved to the degree that it's a less of a risk than it currently is or has been in the past. So that freshwater pathway being a key thing. The yellow areas are the Met Islands, and the dotted lines show the alignments. And so the central alignment would have gone through two of our islands. If that's still the proposed, ends up being the chosen alternative, then that would allow for some ability to manage the project. But if it is the eastern portion of the Delta, one, Metropolitan purchased the islands for more reasons than just Delta conveyance staging and capability. It could also provide for some mitigation value to the project, but it also has a lot of other purposes that I will go through. And it's all about the area being very rich organic soils and that land subsiding over time. And at the same time that sea level is rising, the land is depressing. And so you have water levels that are much higher than the land surface. And when those levees fail, that actually jeopardizes our water supply because it causes a rush of water from the San Francisco Bay, which is much saltier and affects the quality of our water. And, you know, the seepage through the islands because of that water level causing a kind of a hydraulic difference between the land surface in the island and the water surface, that causes risks to the levee failure. And so many of those islands are 20 to 30 feet below sea level. Those blue lines depict the pathway that we're trying to strengthen using our islands, but also our neighboring islands and working in conjunction with them to try to strengthen the pathway so that we would have the use of those channels soon after an earthquake occurs and improve the reliability of the system. And much of the money that is being used for those levees, the majority of the money is coming from state funds rather than water contractor funds. So there's opportunities to do that, to fix the system with carbon sequestration, to reverse that subsidence, and maybe even build up the water land surface, the water land surface differential over time. And that's a part of what we're involved in. Also, adding habitat to portions of the system along the levee fringes could be a benefit as well. We've been in a partnership for about a year or more with state funds under Cal Fish and Wildlife Program, collaborating with different interest groups on what the different alternatives might be for the Delta Islands. And a lot of different entities involved, including UC Davis, helping to facilitate those discussions. And we feel that that's been very positive. I think we've gotten some positive feedback from traditional adversaries that, you know, with these islands, Metropolitan is reaching out and trying to collaborate with parties that it normally hadn't done in the past. But also looking at, you know, like I said, securing those levees and finding ways to improve the system, maybe creating some projects that actually build up the land surface, floating peat on the right hand side is something that occurs in the Louisiana area in that delta, where they use tules to grow areas up and use floating peat as a way to create volume displacement so that if there is a levee failure, there's less of an impact of the salt water volume wise rushing in and causing that impact. But a lot of other things, including seeing what we can do to grow out Delta smelt and maybe prevent their extinction. We're looking at using one of our islands to possibly do that, a Bolden Island, which is one in the north end. Looking at maybe different agriculture and maybe small farms to make it the Delta more sustainable for agriculture. And rather than having the kind of corn and other types of crops that are contributing to the subsidence, having agriculture that actually can reduce the risk of subsidence because of the farming practices that are used. And then maybe education and development of research in the area to help supplement not only our knowledge, but also our relationship with the parties in that area to continue to be a good neighbor up there. The last topic I'm going to cover is aqueduct subsidence, which is also related to adapting to the future because we need the capacity of the aqueduct to deliver large amounts of water in short periods and to store that water in our groundwater banks and our surface storage. And subsidence has been occurring over a number of years. It affects our operations because it reduces the capability of the system to deliver water. It reduces the capacity. And not only does that have an increased cost in terms of operation and maintenance, but it increases the energy cost to move the water from north to south. So it has real impacts and has reduced the capacity to deliver during certain periods. The pictures that I'm showing here on the left-hand side shows, you know, what that subsidence has been since the 1920s. So at the top of that picture, it's showing 1925. The person down below showing where things are recently. So pretty big a dip in that particular area. And the middle picture is showing the subsidence from 1965 and then the subsidence since 1988. So there continues to be continuing subsidence groundwater pumping in the region does contribute significantly to subsidence. And so the Groundwater Sustainability Act that was passed in recent years is intended to correct that problem. For your area, for other areas in Southern California, they operated to adjudicated agreements or to groundwater management plans. But in the San Joaquin Valley, there was nothing similar to that. And so that was a game changer when they had to adhere to the Groundwater Sustainability Act. And there's been, you know, 2.1 to 4.3 inches of subsidence along the aqueduct during the 22 period. The survey during January through February 22 identified subsidence ranging from 2013 to the present when it was measured from 2.1 to 4.3 inches. So pretty significant depending upon where along the aqueduct system. And some areas are worse than others. On the left-hand side, the bigger circles show where, you know, the broader extent of the impact is. The right-hand side shows the deeper subsidence, so the darker colors. And the state of California is really, and through DWR, is really focused on how to attack that problem, where to apply resources, what areas need to be corrected first, and what's the plan for doing that. There's been money made available through the state budget, through the 2021 and 2022 governor's budgets. There's efforts through federal legislation to secure federal funding and using a coalition of water users to do both, to secure state funding and federal funding. So that includes state project contractors and then federal water project contractors that are involved in both the Fryant Water Project as well as the San Luis Central Valley Project. So all of those contractors working together to try to secure funding. And that is what I wanted to go over today. But I think the main message that ties all of this together is adapting to the future and adapting specifically to climate change and the need for infrastructure investments and upgrades. You know, we find locally there's always the need to continue to reinvest, to fix, you know, problems that have occurred, reductions in supply due to contamination, et cetera. And the same we've seen on the Colorado and on the state system. So this was a flavor of what that involves. And thanks for the amount of time to allow for this presentation, and certainly can answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Steve. President Chavez, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, thank you, Tom. So, and thank you, Steve. So, excellent presentation. I'll entertain any questions from the board of directors at this time.
Yeah, Mr. Chavez.
Yes, Dr. Fellow.
I have my hand up. First of all, Steve, as always, you do an outstanding presentation. And in the Delta has been a major challenge for me since I've been in water politics and what we should do with it. And it's been disappointing to go from governor to governor to see that their plans have not come to fruition. Also, I should mention that we heard yesterday that the Met is the largest landholder in the Bay Delta right now. And so that's interesting. But I talk monthly. And yesterday afternoon, Adele and I had a talk, long talk about, we talk about the Bay Delta and fixing it. And we talk about the reactions, like if it were at yesterday's meeting, we had a lot of people call in from the Sierra Club saying they don't want anything done with the Bay Delta, let it die, basically. And when you think about two-thirds of California dependent on the Bay Delta, and we have, as you mentioned, the San Gabriel Valley Water District, is that's where they get their water, and they'll just have to go out of business if we do something like that. But my discussions with Adele deal with the challenges and deals with Sites Reservoir, which I have not made up my mind. I've talked to Congressman Garamendi many times, and it's interesting that the Congress has divvied out some money to proceed with that. But yesterday, Adele mentioned to me again that we do need sites because we need to capture that water. It's now going right into the ocean, the water, that the snowpack we do have, which is lessening, but that we need something to capture that in Sites Reservoir would be the reservoir to do that. but I haven't just made up my mind yet. But I guess the question I have for you after your excellent presentation, I had questions all along, then you would answer it. But do you see great successes with Governor Newsom? I personally do. There's a lot of challenges, but we have, as you mentioned, a lot of opportunities to move ahead. And I think we may see it with this governor and his plan. Am I too optimistic?
So I think this is the seventh iteration of Delta Conveyance that I've worked on in my career. And I'm positive about it because I think the project has to happen. And it comes down to when are we going to actually pull the trigger and do the project. And in this recent effort under Newsom, there's been a great partnership with the water contractors that are interested in the project and the Department of Water Resources. It's the responsible party for doing the environmental work and leading that project. And every indication is that the support in the second term of the governor is going to be there to, you know, make a decision on the project. And, you know, if you're in the Met meetings, I think that you hear kind of more of the flavor of let's make sure we hear the different viewpoints. Let's make sure that the state gets the benefit of all of the input, because that is the way that we're going to push things forward, whether it's sites or whether it's Delta Conveyance, how we get more parties involved in their input so that then we can have the best chance of moving it forward. And that's really the sense that I think you hear at the board. And that's recognizing that, you know, we're going through some challenging times within the metropolitan service area. Those that more easily get state project water, those that don't, Colorado River water and what needs to happen in order to make things work plumbing wise within Met. But I think, all to say that, if we have the sea level rise that's being projected and we have that shift in hydrology, which is occurring, the state of California would be hard pressed to replace that volume of water that's going to these significant portions of the California, the Bay Area, the Central Coast, Southern California, the economy of California. So it's all on all of us that have been involved to try to do the best we can in our planning efforts and making the right decisions to allow for a state policy decision on this so that we don't end up in a situation where either an earthquake occurs or we see the sea level affecting the system. And then somebody says, well, what did you do about it? So I believe in the project. I think it has to be done. I think the question is, are we going to do it soon enough where it makes a difference before something, you know, really negative happens? And every indication from our partnership with DWR has been that they're serious about moving the project forward, but we'll have to see. And I think within Metropolitan, it's about, rather than repeating the same ways that we've tried to support the project, maybe there's a better way we can do that and get maybe some maybe less opposition or more neutrality, but that's yet to be seen.
Well, I think one of the great points we've met right now is that, especially with Adele, is that he wants everyone at the table to have input, including the indigenous, the Indians, and there's also a lot of social justice issues. And thank God that we have Senator Anna Caballero working on these problems up there and has done a great job. But positive, I'm glad you came today, because yesterday I came home kind of negative hearing all this. The public saying, you know, the Sierra Club, the Conservation League, just let's, you know, basically walk away. And I just don't think we can. And I think Southern California still doesn't realize a major earthquake in San Francisco will have be held to pay for Southern California. And great presentation. And we do have to move ahead with this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Fellow. So any other questions from other directors?
I have no questions, but I just wanted to thank Stephen for that fantastic presentation.
Absolutely. So I just had a quick question, but before I do that, I will be happy to entertain any questions from the audience. So if you have a question, please have your hand raised, but let me get through the board of directors first. So Stephen, my only thought was, and Dr. Fellow touched on it at the beginning, was having different governors. So, you know, each governor serves one 4-year term, or maybe gets reelected to a second term for a total of 8 years. The Bay Delta originally was set at 2 tunnels. Then Newsom came in and he said 1 tunnel. So if Newsom leaves, runs for president and leaves his office, or he's already on his running on his second term and another governor comes in, what if the next governor after Newsom decides, you know what, that 2 tunnel idea was probably a better idea? What would that do to the project? What delays would that cause? And would that be actually an overall benefit?
Yeah, that's a really tough one, because, you know, having lived through the 2 tunnels and now the 1 tunnel and really seeing the need for doing something, I think you can always circle back and you know, modify the project. What it does is it means you go back and do some more environmental review work and then come back with an updated environmental document. And then, you know, the permitting that goes along with it. So it's a time issue. With time comes cost, obviously. And I think that, in the end, when I think about it, it's, the 1 tunnel is going to be primarily for the State Water Project. When we had 2 tunnels, it had room for the Central Valley Project, the Federal Water Project, and the State Project. But we ran into a situation where the federal contractors didn't see themselves in a position to invest. And so that's when, you know, there were discussions about, well, maybe we should invest anyway. And, you know, they may come along later and, you know, recoup that investment and all. But I think that the 6,000 and the 1 tunnel is well suited to the State Water Project. It kind of fits with our portion that would have been under the 2 tunnel approach under Cal Water Fix. And yeah, there's no guarantees. I mean, if a new governor comes along and changes everything and turns it upside down, I mean, that's something that we don't necessarily control. But I do think that if we can get through as much of the environmental process as possible, that helps keep things moving so that we can make some kind of decision.
Can I just interject to answer your question too? Great job, Steve. But one of the problems that bothers me very much is that when there is a new governor, we've done these environmental studies, a lot of that ends. It's really invalid, and we've wasted millions and millions of dollars on this with no progress. And so that's the biggest flaw in this whole thing. And this is why we do need to move forward. And I hope this governor does that. Thank you again, Steve.
Yeah, good comment.
Thank you. Any other directors wishing to address this issue or make any comments? If not, Vanessa, do we have any hands raised in the audience that wishes to ask any questions?
At this time, President Chavez, I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. Well, with that, I want to thank our wonderful guest speaker and addressing some of these issues that we all face. And I appreciate your update, and I know there'll be many, many updates as we go along this project. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciated having the opportunity to do it and really enjoyed it and enjoyed talking with all of you. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Steve.
Mr. Love, do we have anything else on this item before we move forward?
No, that concludes this item.
Thank you. Then we'll go to item number 8, informational items. There's press releases and news articles that you may read at your leisure. We'll go to number 9, attorney's report. And Mr. O'Neill, welcome.
Probably muted.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was muted. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do have a brief report on some matters that we've been involved in since the last meeting. Of course, worked with the staff and the board to get the closed session issue coordinated for today concerning the general manager's evaluation. Worked with Evelyn on the resolution that was before you today on conflicts of interest. Also communicated with staff on the new Rubio bill, Assembly Bill 2449, concerning remote meetings. Also worked on some issues concerning WaterFest and some admin issues concerning the copy release and the conflict code. Also wanted to report on a matter that I've reported on intermittently over the past couple of years, the San Diego versus Metropolitan trial. There's a trial that wound up yesterday with San Diego Water Authority challenging Metropolitan's rates for 2014 and 2016. The final arguments were completed and briefing was submitted yesterday. So at some point, we're going to see probably in the next few weeks a ruling from the court on that matter. And when we get that ruling, I'm sure Tom and myself and Director Feller will be notified and we'll be reporting back on to the board on the implications of that ruling. So with that, I'll conclude my attorney's report.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for our attorney? Thank you. Then we'll move to item number 10, engineer's report, and Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning to everyone. Welcome to the board. Good to see everybody. By the way, great report by Steve Arakawa. I mean, that probably was the most comprehensive report that I've heard in a long time about the whole State Water Project and all the issues and what they're trying to do. So it was a great report. I don't think he's on anymore, but anyway, great report. I'll try to keep this quick. We've been here a long time already. Keywell was measured on the 23rd of September at 178.2, still dropping, but only 0.2 feet from the prior week, which is a little bit of a slowdown, which is good. Still about 1.6 feet lower than it was the prior month. And we're about 7 feet lower than we were just a year ago. So it's amazing with all the work that's been done to put water in this basin, and we're still struggling to keep the key well above. That just shows you how dry it is and how tough this job is to try to keep that basin with water in it. Still about 110,000 acre feet of imported cyclic storage water, imported water in the basin being stored. Up in the canyon, we're down to minimum pool. It's very, very dry up there. Everybody knows all of that. There's still a little bit of water coming in from San Gabriel, about 6 CFS, very small flow coming in. But we're at minimum pool. There's no releases. There's basically no water up there. I do this every year. The good news is that when the rains come, we've got plenty of room to store it because everything's dry up there. So all the reservoirs are low. So we've got plenty of room when it comes. Deliveries of water, really no imported deliveries. San Gabriel, the Fort City District, they've got a small allocation of State Water Project supply, and they're going to bring in some water, probably the San Gabriel Canyon spreading grounds during this next month, but it's not much. It's not going to make a difference, but they're going to get the water delivered. Rainfall, Puddingstone Dam, and LA Civic Center, with the storms we had in September, it's gotten us up to about 60 to 80% of normal for this time of year, but we're way early. There's nothing to shout about other than we did get a little bit of water. Water quality, we always provide the work that Watermaster does on Title 22, water quality testing of the wells. This is the testing at the well site that they do under the administrative assessment. In August, 80 wells were sampled. In July, 57 wells were sampled, and I've reported before, it fluctuates because wells are on different cycles. Some are quarterly, some are monthly, some are semi-annually, so every month it changes a little bit. We also did not receive any new notices of new wells being shut down due to water quality concerns. And with that, I know we've been going a while. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions for our engineer directors? Hearing none, then we will thank Mr. Johnson for his report and go to item number 11, General Manager Report. Mr. Love.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, a few things to report on. On Monday morning, 7 a.m., USG3 will be opened at about 280 CFS cubic feet per second to deliver 14,695 acre feet of state project water to the Santa Fe spreading grounds. That delivery will take a little less than 30 days to complete. But you will see water flowing down the river and into the Santa Fe spreading grounds over the next several weeks. Steve reported on the key wall forecast. I did want to mention that it is the key well levels are consistent with the forecasts that we've looked at. And it does appear that conservation is doing pretty well. I know during the MWD shutdown, recent shutdown, MWD reported that they saw a 30% reduction in demands. And certainly that tells us that people did respond to that call for conservation. We are continuing our presentations on the drought actions and the water supply situation to our local electeds. Next week, I will be making a presentation to the City Manager's Steering Committee of the Council of Governments. So we'll continue that dialogue and that communication. Lastly, on the building, I have, you know, all this belated, perhaps good news. We are targeting a move-in to the office on October 23rd. It appears that, our office area will be ready for occupancy by that time. There are a few other, you know, still some electrical things and some lighting panels that do affect the boardroom. And so the boardroom will not be available probably till nearer the end of October. We would like you to check your calendars because we would like to schedule a dedication event for the new building, either the week before Thanksgiving, which is the week of November 13th, or on the 21st or 22nd, the week of Thanksgiving. And so if we do it the week of the 13th, probably later in the week, the 16th, 17th, or 18th. But please let us know what your availability is. So this, our intent is this will be a dedication event, dedicate the building. But later on, when some of the other work is completed in the building, the landscaping perhaps is in, maybe later in December or in January, we want to have an open house and invite everyone to come and see the new building. So we will have two events planned. One will be the dedication coming up here in November, and then a later event for an open house. That concludes my presentation or my update.
Thank you, Mr. Love. Any questions for our general manager directors? If not, thank you for that. We will go to item number 12, director's comments, and we'll start with Dr. Fellow.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to what Thomas was talking about, I just gave a talk in Monrovia, and the questions they had dealt with the building. They just wanted to know what was going on, why wasn't it done yet, and that was kind of interesting. Okay, yesterday the Metropolitan Water District did meet, and the One Water Committee adopted a resolution yesterday encouraging action to reduce or eliminate water irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water. And this resolution, which has the Met can't demand that it be institutionalized, suggests language that for councils, for governments, that potentially could be inserted into a municipality's water conservation ordinance, depending on the nature and scope of its authority. And there's basically three points to this, and they include prohibiting irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water after the effective date of the ordinance with certain exceptions, two, prohibiting installations of non-functional turf after the effective date of the ordinance with certain exceptions, and three, requiring the removal of all non-functional turf from commercial, industrial, or public properties or facilities by a date certain. The One Water Committee also was provided an update on the impact of MWD's conservation programs the past 5 years. And we learned that tremendous amounts of water have been saved by, one, removing 3.7 million square feet of turf per year, operationalizing high-efficiency clothes washers, inaugurating municipal leak detection programs, and offering California-friendly and native landscape courses. Met has offered so far 217 classes with a total population of 5,000. The board also started the process yesterday for the election of a new chair. The board laid out procedures for the chair's election, which will take place October 11th, with the election of the board secretary taking place on November 8th. The executive committee voted 14-6 in favor of moving Chairman Gloria Gray's request to have a third term to the whole board. We've had directors who have, despite the numerous phone calls we got yesterday saying this was unprecedented, we have had Phil Pace, Jack Foley, and Randy Record ask for terms. It was also, I learned yesterday, that we had MWD chairs that one served 15 years and another, I think Joe Jensen, served 20 years during its golden years. Don Ortega was nominated by the city of San Fernando, and Ms. Gray's nomination from West Basin will be finalized if she has the whole board support for a third term. And nominations for chair also will be made from the floor on October 11th. And there's been some talk of people like David DeJesus and others who might be interested. Finally, Director David DeJesus and I will lead an MWD tour to Hoover Dam and Parker Dam October 28th. Directors this year had to double up because of COVID efforts, and so we didn't have as many seats open. And right now, I believe it is full, and we've tried to get people who never were on these trips before. And I think we have representation from across the divisions. Okay, this is my report, Mr. President. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll go to Director Garcia.
I just wanted to say that I love the presentation today. My inner water nerd, or I guess it's outer water nerd. I was very happy, so I appreciated that. That's my only comment for today. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Trevino?
I don't have any comment, Chair.
Vice President Santana?
Yeah, I wanted to mention that there's a really great, we always have these press releases. I wanted to highlight there's this really interesting one in our packet regarding monitoring microplastics in water. I would really suggest people check it out. And tap water versus bottled water, we're consuming more plastics with bottled water. So that's another incentive for our residents to focus on tap water, refilling their reusable water bottles. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. I have no report, but I wanted to ask Mr. Love if he could send a note of condolences to I just forgot his name. Who recently lost his mother.
Adon Ortega?
Adon Ortega, yes. Sorry, thank you about that. Yes, if you could send that on behalf of the board of directors and the district, I would appreciate that.
We will follow through on that.
Thank you. And then with that, we will go to the next item, item number 13, future agenda items. If there's any, yes, go ahead.
Mr. President, Jen talked about that the article on plastics, and Jen and I visited the Arcadia plant, which is taking PFAS, which is a problem with plastics and cosmetics, out of the water. And I don't know if we ought to have a presentation or something from Paul Kramer at Arcadia, or even take a little field trip with all of us there. We went with Judy Chu, and there's not a lot to see, but I think it's amazing what Arcadia is doing with PFAS. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and submit that item to our general manager. With that, we'll go to item number 14, and we're going to adjourn to closed session. So directors, you should see on your screen to join breakout rooms. So if you could join that breakout room, we'll discuss closed session items, and those people in the public may wish to stay on to hear any conclusion or any actions of the board once we come back out of closed session. So we're now in closed session. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I just have to announce that the board will be meeting pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to discuss performance review of the general manager. Thank you.
So good morning, everyone. Mr. Love, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, so we just concluded a closed session. Let me know when all the directors are present, and let the record show that Director Garcia needed to step away from the meeting, so she will no longer join us.
All right, let's see.
And make sure our attorney
is here. Yes, we have all directors, except for Director Garcia, are present.
And Mr. O'Neill's with us too?
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay. So, again, just wanted to report that the Board of Directors has concluded the closed session items. And Mr. O'Neill, can you report any action that the Board may have taken?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to have a performance review of the General Manager. A discussion was had by the Board, and no formal action was taken at this time. That concludes my closed session report.
Thank you. With that, we will go to adjournment. Mr. Love, is there any other items that we need to dispense with as Board?
No, I just did want to mention to the directors that, as always, I have an open invitation. If you do want to take a look at the new building, just let me know and we'll arrange a time to meet and I can walk you through.
Excellent. Anything else from the Board of Directors? If not, then we will adjourn this meeting and thank everybody for participating.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.